Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of The Only Podcast. I am your co-host, Austin Smith, joined as always by your other co-host, John Kirby. You can find us on Twitter at ACSmith06 and at John_Kirby. And as always, follow the mothership at The Only Colors. Today is Monday, March 15th. And John, for the first time in 2 years, happy March Madness. One other thing. This podcast is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage, as am I personally, and as is John also personally. We've already gotten the tattoos. The rights have been sold. Thank you to our billionaire overlords. We very much appreciate it.
Yeah, and that's the last we'll use that joke because it's been beat to death.
It's literally written into our now contract as Michigan State University alums that we have to make mention of Rocket Mortgage.
Big shout out to rival fans trying to punk or clown the fact that you have not one but two billionaire donors who are trying to give more money than the other one to your school so you get better at the sport. Man, really got me.
Yeah, that hurt. That one, that hit me right in the money bone. It just took me wiping my tears away with a few dollar bills to get over that.
It's the Dave Chappelle gif of holding the money close.
That's exactly what I tweeted after that happened. It's like, listen, some people don't like billionaires and that's fine. But when they're giving money to my school to help my team do better at sports, I'm a fan. I'm a fan.
I mean, you can eat the rich or you can ask them to make your basketball team better.
Exactly. These are your two options.
We can do both, but let's at least make sure they're given to your favorite basketball team.
So. I want to see some other local, non-billionaires get in the mix, like Crunchies or the Peanut Barrel or Rick's. Like Rick's should honestly sponsor the floor at Michigan State, like at the basketball, like of the actual court.
You want to slow some tempo.
And make it really sticky.
So the ball
can move.
Man.
The ball doesn't actually bounce off the ground.
I do not recommend licking your hands and touching your shoes after that one. Which is
an all-time
weirdo move, like by basketball players that's just universally just accepted. Like you're licking the ground and everyone's like, yep, no problem. That's part of the sport. And you're like, hand up all the time. But it's just like, this is a really.
But it just looks so cool. It's like smoking cigarettes. It's like, this is bad. I'm just going to hit. Yeah, I know it's bad. But look how cool I look.
This could kill me, but I do look cool doing it.
Anyways, basketball. How about that? Michigan State in the tournament, John.
Yes, they are for the 23rd straight year. Shame on the doubters, as we said from the jump. It's embarrassing, really. But 23 years, huh? But we'll get to that because there was a tournament that happened before the NCAA tournament, which we'll talk about. And that was the Big Ten tournament, which prior to this year was the thing that mattered most, I believe, to at least Michigan fans as the true measure of if you were won the conference or not. That, I believe, is now being stored far away. Not true anymore as Illinois took home the trophy. But jokes aside, this was a very, very poor showing for our Michigan State Michigan State Spartans, who struggled mightily out of the gate against a Maryland team that just seems to have their number and or just a really bad matchup for them. So the Spartans came out. The start was really nice. That was fun. Mm-hmm. And then there was the middle part, which I'd like to forget. And then the end was cool again when Malik Hall was like, I should get buckets. It's Malik Hall time. And he had like 19 or something wild. So besides that, I don't want to talk about the game anymore because while I was very pro Jack Hoiberg playing, in the regular season, I very much became against that idea in the postseason.
Jack, just to hit on him for a second, you got to stop digging in, man. You got to stop. He was trying to dig in and take the ball from like Dante Hall or whoever was posting up and immediately got burned for threes at least once. And I think two, one or two other times. And then he's the funniest image, like you know things aren't good when, is like him jumping to close out on like a 6'5" guard, like Daryl Morcell's pulling up. And Jack Hoiberg's like trying to get a hand in his face and instead is like touching his thigh.
Yeah,
it's not good.
I want to say one quick thing about this game, because the narrative of this one quickly was that the referees, and Bo Borowski in particular, kind of ran the show and made that game. It was the ref show a bit, right? And that tends to happen with certain referees in the Big Ten. We certainly used to see it a lot in the past with TV Teddy. And Bo Borowski, clearly Tom Izzo and he do not get along. Now, I'll say this. I was pretty disappointed in this game, if only because the players let that get to them. And you are not talented enough to let that happen. And I was pleased to see that Tom Izzo apologized to everyone, because he let it get it to him. And like, dude, I know it's bad. Like, we all saw it was bad, right? Mm-hmm. But when you're giving Maryland 4 points because you want to complain about it being bad, you're losing the game. This team can't score like it did with Cassius Winston and Xavier Tillman.
Right.
You cannot give points away when the margin is so thin. And I was just disappointed that everybody, you know, just decided that it was, well, refs. It's like, holy shit, man.
Well, I mean, the part where I get it is that the game turned on some like MSU got up, what, double digits, and then it immediately turned into foul, all on Michigan State. And the refs, again, like, I don't think ultimately like the refs are making decisions. Oh, we got to keep this a close game. Like, it's the first game in the second round of the Big Ten tournament. Like, do we really have agendas here? And also, if there were agendas, would it not be to get Michigan State further into this tournament? Like, just being totally honest. So, like, Bo Borowski likes to make it about himself. I hate that teams have to play to the way that games are called. It will never sit right with me. But at the same point in time, like, yes, the refs were bad enough to make an impact in the beginning of this game. But ultimately, you got to make shots. I mean, this team, like, you know, you can't then turn around and complain that you can't make shots or that you're not driving the ball to the rack and getting the same calls. Like, if they're going to call it tight, go play that same game. And they started to do that in the second half. And you kind of started to chip away a little bit. It was just too much. Yeah, too little, too late.
And that was just it. In the first half, like you said, the game changed. Whether, you know, fair or unfair or whatever it is, the game changed from a refereeing perspective. Okay, adjust to it. Like, right. It was really disappointing. And, you know, we were digging on Jack Hoiberg a bit. He's the only one who drove the lane and got fouled.
Mm-hmm.
Why is he the one that understands the game had changed? Why is Aaron Henry, Josh Langford, and Gabe Brown all decided in the same time span when Maryland drove the lane and they got their 6 fouls in the first half taking to the basket? Right. That same time span on offense, they all said to themselves, it's long two time, baby. Like, what are you doing? Like, if they're not able to make that understanding or awareness in the game, then Tom needs to stop getting in Bo Borowski's ear and get in the ear of his players about what they need to do to adjust. And it's very easy for me to critique a Hall of Fame coach. Do not get me wrong. That is not my intention. I was just happy to see Tom say, you know what? I got focused on the wrong things. It won't happen again. And, you know, he's probably been, and as he mentioned, this is not a one-game thing with Bo. He has had a problem with him for, he referenced the game back last year. So clearly they have a history, but you know, it didn't go Michigan State's way. When you get in a game, you know, of a team with a similar caliber, like a UCLA, we'll get to them. You just want to take away that shit. Like, just play the game and you can beat them.
Yeah. I mean, don't do the dumb stuff, right? Like that's honestly what it boils down to with this team as much as anything, is just play smart. And we can get past this game here because we got a lot to cover, but like, right, you know, that this game was where not having a lead guard came back to hurt him, because you Rocket's not a point guard. He doesn't really drive the lane all that aggressively, and you don't have somebody out there to dictate the game for you like that, you know, and your coach is his mind elsewhere apparently.
It was a winnable game.
It is what it is. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, it would have been a real backbreaker, obviously, had MSU not gotten in because of it. You know, had they not beaten Michigan, I don't think we'd be sitting here talking about how excited we are for this week. But, you know, it was just another kind of in that same line. Spin zone, I don't hate having another day off. This team has played a lot of basketball recently and is now going to have to play an extra game early. So, you know, that number, that day off might not have end up being the worst thing in the world. But there was the rest of the tournament.
Yeah, let's go through, because every game provided a new headline. So we'll go quickly. But Minnesota took out Northwestern in a very unwatchable game, 51-46. And the result of that for me was, is Chris Collins on the hot seat? What do you think, Austin?
I don't think he's going to get fired this year, but yeah. I do think that next year is big time. Like, I don't even know that he needs to make the tournament, but like you got to be competing for it. Like, you need to be on the bubble, I would say, at the least. Like, you can't be Northwestern and then all of it, and like, oh, we need to be in the tournament and pound the table because you made it one time. Like, but you can also be allowed to not be satisfied with being the worst or second worst team in a conference. I think he's going to get some slack, but I do think that we made the NCAA tournament and the Big Ten is hard card is going to be really tough to play beyond next year.
It's tough because, you know, like you said, you're measured against yourself. And I don't think anyone's saying like, you got to make the tournament every year, but he won back-to-back 20 win seasons, which is incredible at Northwestern. But then he throws up a 15 winner, a 13 and 8 winner.
Right.
And then this year, 9, and not as many games, but let's not pretend like they were going to win 20. So it's not good. They're trending in the wrong direction.
I think you need, if you have another stinker next year, you got to move on. You got to thank him. I mean, you were riding this huge high, and then to not be able to turn around and cash in on it just really is brutal. But it's put up or shut up time next year.
Yeah, and so then Penn State takes out Nebraska, and you know the honeymoon period, I gotta think, is over with Hoiberg. As far as like, this was a wash, right? But next year is kind of the year zero happened. Now we got to start to talk about like, okay, you know, you can't win 3 games in the Big Ten next year. You got to I think you just got to have some improvement, right? And then
it's tangible progress time.
Yeah,
you can't be bottom of the standings again.
So you're going to see a lot of transfers being flying into Lincoln.
Oh, yeah.
So keep your eye on Twitter, because it's going to be like Mel Tucker and the transfer portal. It's just they know what they're doing in there. Okay, so Ohio State beats Minnesota by 4. And as a result, Lil Patino fired. And Austin, I got to tell you, I'm shocked that hiring a guy who had 1 year of head coaching experience at Florida International didn't work out in Minnesota. It's shocking news.
I have to say, just flabbergasting that a coach who wasn't good at coaching basketball failed to coach basketball well. Credit to him. He did make the tournament, but man, those teams were way better. They underperformed under him pretty much the entire time he was there. I mean, they had the Big Ten's leading scorer, I think, in Marcus Carr, or maybe second leading scorer behind Garza. And
last year they had Oturu for a first round pick.
Yeah, right.
Like, it's not like he lacked for talent. He had two guys who will ultimately be have their jerseys in the rafters. God, I'm blanking on their names right now, but
there was the 6'6" Jordan Williams or something like that, the power forward,
who was there for 9 years.
Yep.
It's not like that he didn't have guys.
Well, he had Amir Coffey too. I mean, they had some good teams.
I mean, they had some guys, and you know, not enough apparently, and his shortcomings were clearly the reason. So, Minnesota moving on. Not sure who they're going to move on to. I would imagine probably seems like a Missouri Valley Drake head coach kind of hire to me, but who knows?
I could see that. I mean, we've had some other successes in the Big Ten recently, bringing in guys from small schools. So who knows? Minnesota is a tough job, man. Like, you have a fan base that has weirdly high standards. Trying to recruit kids to come play basketball in Minnesota in like when your sport is in the winter is got to be very difficult. And Minnesota, not exactly this, you know, hop and hop out of talent, although they have churned out some good players. And, you know, Wisconsin always puts out a few good ones. But I don't know. I think you need a young, dynamic coach to come in and build that. I think you need to rebuild the culture there. There's other places like some of the ones we'll talk about. I think that dovetails nicely into this next game, like Indiana, where I think you need someone who's more of a vet. But I think Minnesota needs a kind of a young firebrand type of guy.
I would say, yeah. And you got to remember with Minnesota, they're the seventh show in town. Yeah. It's a pro sports town. So you got four sports that are more important there. And then you got the football team and then the hockey team.
Yeah.
Which I'm telling you, with a wife who is from Minneapolis, hockey was more important to the fan base than basketball. So it's a tough job. And then you're expected to compete at the Big Ten level in the toughest conference in basketball. It's not an easy one. But like you said, there is talent. There's plenty of talent in Minnesota.
Yeah, right guy can come in and make a difference. I just don't know, it's just challenging because you talk about, okay, where would you want to pull somebody from? Probably the Midwest, but they're in like the Northwest. Like, I don't even think, you know what I mean? Like, Minnesota's kind of in this random location, maybe like an old, like a Wisconsin assistant, something along those lines. I don't know. It'll be a very interesting, it'd be very interesting to see what they can do up there.
Well, they could go with a guy on the top of my head, but you mentioned Indiana loses to Rutgers and the Archie show is no more in Bloomington. Indiana has moved on. They raised $10 million in quick philanthropy capital to rid themselves of Archie.
Oh, I love that.
The $10 million does not affect the salary of the next coach. This was literally to just get rid of a coach. So that was a pretty definitive no thank you on bringing him back. couple names are floating around. John Beilein is a real name being considered. What do you think?
I mean, I think John Beilein would be a home run hire. We've said it on here so many times. I hated when he was at Michigan because I respected him so much as a coach. I was like, okay, I know they're not going to have top level, even though they did. Basically, the way I always looked at Beilein was, it doesn't really matter what type of talent he has. He is going to put players in, he's going to recruit to his system, and he's going to figure it out. He turned so many guys at U of M from unheralded recruits. He was a very Mark D'Antonio type of coach for Michigan basketball, where he took guys like Trey Burke, Nick Stauskas, I mean, Mo Wagner, like these dudes that are not big recruits, and not only had success in spades at Michigan, but put him in the NBA. I mean, He is no joke. I mean, Caris LeVert, like there's numerous examples. Duncan Robinson. I mean, come on. Like there's tons of these guys. Sure. Franz Wagner. I mean, Iggy Brazdeikis. Like, I don't mean to like gush over Michigan basketball, but he was really a phenomenal coach. And I don't think if you're Indiana, I do not think, well, just for PR alone, they're not going to hire another young guy from anywhere but a Power Five conference.
Yeah.
Yep. And so I think you're going to look for someone a little bit more established. And Beilein, even though he's 68 years old, would be a great place to start. I think there's some other hot names out there that are going to really pick up steam here, assuming their teams do well in the conference or in the tournament. And that's Nate Oates from Alabama and Scott Drew from Baylor. I think two great programs that are hot right now. But, I mean, whether they deserve it or not, Indiana's still Indiana, which is, if you can go there and be a legend, I mean, shit, we're sitting here waxing poetically about Tom Crean, and he barely even all he did was win the Big Ten. If you go there and actually win some real big stuff, you're a legend forever.
Yeah, I don't love the idea that Nate Oates would consider that, because it's no pressure, but it's no pressure at Alabama. They don't care if you do well or not. Like you football is the sport, right? And you can get paid just as much, because their athletic budget is wild because of the success they've had. It doesn't make sense to me to like change that. That's just me personally. It doesn't mean that someone doesn't want the challenge. Like I'm not saying it's a bad move. I'm just thinking from like a comfortability standpoint, like I can't imagine building something at Alabama or like Clemson or even Ohio State basketball wise and being like, yeah, I want to go take the Kentucky job now, where they want me fired after being down at halftime once. Like, that sounds insane to me. But, I mean, yeah, I hear you. I mean, they're names that are being considered. That's true.
It's just at the end of the day, I mean, it depends who you are as a coach, right? Uh-huh. Like, ultimately, yeah, it might not be as good a job as a Bama or a Baylor, like a place you know you could stay for 15 more years and be the head coach based on what you've done to date. Like, for sure, there's a lot to be said for that. But I just think a lot of these guys probably look at it and you're like, I'm only going to get the chance to coach a team like Indiana, at a place like Indiana, at a place like Kentucky, like those types of jobs. Like, you might only get that chance one time. And, like, you know, I think a lot of these guys probably look at that and think, you know, if that chance ever came for me, like, I would have to take it. So I don't know. I definitely see both sides of it, but I got to think that anybody out there is going to pick up Indiana's phone call, at least, and take, they're going to take the meeting.
They'll take the meeting. Can I give you two more quick names?
Love that.
Thad Matta. Now, I got a lot of pushback on that name, but I do want to remind everybody that he's the winningest coach in Ohio State basketball history. And Ohio State has a better basketball history than you'd probably think.
Yeah.
He also won the league five times, five at Ohio State. And he went to two Final Fours. And he was churning out NBA guys at a certain point. Now, it ended maybe less than beautifully, but I don't if you're looking for a guy that can stabilize something, I think he's a guy that can come in and certainly do better than Archie Miller did.
Yeah, I mean, he knows the conference. He's been very well respected. I think that's an interesting name too. I don't know. I think there's, I mean, I'd call Dana Altman from Oregon. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's, I think Indiana, again, they don't deserve it based on the quality of basketball they're putting out right now.
Right.
But you can make a call just about anywhere and have somebody pick it up, you know?
It's true. Here's the final name, the wild card name. And this name works for both actually Indiana and Minnesota. It's the true nuclear option, Rick Pitino.
Ugh, give me it. I would absolutely jump for joy.
Iona head coach, currently in the NCAA tournament, certainly in the area right now, by the way, if you want to get an interview in. He is in town. He is the nuclear option, as we mentioned, because he had some mishaps back in the career. But it should be noted, I don't believe he's ever had any NCAA sanctions or allegations or whatever.
Well, he's there.
Yeah, he was fired or left before they could happen.
Listen, the guys, he would be the first ever to have the Kentucky, Indiana, Louisville triumvirate on his resume, which I think would be pretty damn huge. Impressive. Also be coaching at another school while having a Louisville tattoo on him. That would be interesting.
Incredible. That's a, you know, truly underrated point. And I think another thing is if you can make Kentucky and Louisville mad, you got to consider it if you're Indiana.
I completely agree with you there. I think you got to do it. Indiana, I mean, listen, I would not put the chances of that one very high, but man, would I just love to see it happen. Just the content alone would be just remarkable.
But how good would the story be if they fired Richard Pitino and hired
his dad, and then they hired Richard back as an assistant,
which would happen at Indiana too, by the way.
Yeah,
it would be obvious to do that because he knows the conference badly, poorly. He's not good, but he can.
he knows what loses games. There's no question about that.
Exactly. All right. Enough about Indiana and their trash program. Very, very quickly, Wisconsin beat Penn State. The big takeaway is they have a new head coach, and he is an assistant from Purdue and former Celtics assistant under Brad Stevens. A little surprised by this hire. How about you?
Yeah, Micah Shrewsbury, like you said, by way of Purdue and the Boston Celtics. I don't know much about him, to be honest with you, but I what I like from Penn State with this hire is if they are committing to going down the Purdue path of probably not always winning pretty, but consistently winning and making guys, again, kind of like the same John Beilein example. Purdue has that really a prolific history with finding guys that are maybe not super highly recruited and competing in a really tough recruiting atmosphere against Notre Dame basketball, again, not nailing five stars every year, but that's a big entity within your own state. And then you've got Indiana, and you have Michigan State, and you have Kansas, and you have Duke, and you have, like, you know, Indiana is a hotbed of talent, but Purdue's not going to be one of the first couple names that you think of when you think of where are the big recruits from this state going. So this guy's obviously, you know, kind of dealt with that before, and being a professional coach, I mean, credit to Juwan Howard, man. I mean, Juwan Howard showed that being an NBA assistant can help you bring something to a program that maybe it didn't have before. So if this guy's got, you know, anywhere near that type of experience, that's going to be beneficial for them. So I don't know. It sounds like a shrewd hire, but then again, it is Penn State. So just, you know, it's hard to be too confident, but yeah, I don't know. We'll see.
Here's one quick thing about, he was at Purdue from 2011, 2013, then went to the Celtics, then came back to Purdue from 2019 to 2021. One unsaid thing about Purdue basketball, and we don't say a lot of nice things about them on this podcast, but they deserve the shout out that since Maryland and Rutgers joined the conference, they have the highest conference winning percentage. They're the best.
They are, you know, we love to play our disrespect card. Mm-hmm. They can really play that disrespect card.
Because they,
nobody
they,
respects Purdue.
They can't make a Final Four. I mean, maybe this is the year. Sure. I mean, that,
you know, but, have that propensity to, you know, Clemson way back when was Clemsoning.
Yeah.
And Purdue is kind of that in basketball. They do. They show consistently with, like, really good teams, players of the year, Caleb Swanigan, like, you know, not like scrubs. So, I mean, it'll be, you know, seems like a savvy hire, but we'll see.
So moving on, Michigan takes down Maryland by 13, but that was the headline was that there was a confrontation between a head coach Juwan Howard and head coach Mark Turgeon. I don't think we'll ever know what actually happened, but we're talking about someone said something, and here's what happens for Michigan fans. Juwan, if you missed it, Juwan Howard gets ejected from the game because of either he said or he was going to do. It got out of control from both sides. Like, they both benches were out of control during a timeout. Now, here's the problem for Michigan fans. This is where you have to pick and choose. Juwan Howard was so upset by something that somebody said to him that he lost his mind and got ejected from a postseason game.
Right.
Which is not a good look. Or he was triggered so much by, which was allegedly said, which was, I think you had the quote, but it was like, if you better take down your banners because all of your banners come down.
He said, you don't even hang the banner because you end up taking those down anyway, or something like that, which, first of all, let's just take a second. And if this was said, which I'm going to choose to believe it was.
Wow.
That is one of the most remarkable lines of shit talk I've ever heard in my entire life. Great. So much so that it maybe made Juwan Howard lose his cool in, like, a big moment. And, like, just what a line. Just, like, I mean, bravo to Mark Turgeon. Maybe not the most professional move, if it was even done at all.
Of course.
But I could – incredible stuff. Just the shit talk you dream of.
One of the best shit talks from a senior citizen I've ever heard. And then secondly, so if that's what set him off, like, then okay. Or Mark Turgeon said something else that set him off so much. Both are bad. Like, both are a very bad look for getting ejected over, in my opinion. And it's a bad look for Mark Turgeon, you know, to be engaging in that shit. But regardless, it's a good chirp. You can all agree that. It was just odd. It was just really odd, and it really overshadowed the game. Obviously, that's the headline. But even if he didn't say it, Austin, I think it's going to be said every day moving forward.
If nothing else, it's a hell of a plant by whoever rolled with that rumor, because that's some good stuff that will get used somewhere down the line. And, like, the other thing is about it is, like, Juwan Howard's super vocal coach. Michigan players love to stare players down and talk some shit. Like,
fine.
This is kind of their thing. So either back it up and don't flip your lid when somebody gives something back to you, or you know, I guess fight about it is the other option. And I guess that's the route that Juwan chose to take. So we'll see. We'll see. I mean, it's not a good look. I mean, I agree with you though. Like, to me, it would, if I was a Michigan fan, like I would love seeing the fire from my coach. Like, I think that level of competition is an awesome thing to see. That's why we love Tom Izzo. But at the same point in time, Tom Izzo, for as nuts as he has been on a court before, where you thought he might assault somebody, has never charged another bench. Like, he's never crossed the line that Juwan Howard just crossed.
And I can't remember it anyway. Maybe it happened.
No chance. It's never been like a hockey coach situation where you're pushing against like the glass partition. You know what I mean? Like, it's never. And if there's one coach you probably thought would do that, it would be him or like Fran McCaffrey.
Sure. And
so I just, you know, I just want to say that it would worry me a little bit, because if you just lost your composure that bad because of either a miraculous line of shit talk or something on that like same level, that would make me a little bit nervous for how you're going to handle bigger moments when, you know, people know they can now get under your skin a little bit.
But also, dude, this is so weird that I saw everyone being like, man, Mark's lucky that Juwan didn't get to him. And it's like,
what was he going to do? Actually, like him in the face? Like, that was going to happen?
And never coach again? Like, okay. Right. Like, what do you mean? Yeah, you're lucky you didn't get to him. Like, for what? Then you lose the best coach you've had, like the most surprising, I mean, come up you've had as a head coach. I don't want to say he's better than John Beilein yet. I don't think that's fair.
No,
but I think that what I'm saying is, like, then you lose your head coach over something dumb. Like, what a, like, that was wild.
I think if anybody's lucky he didn't get to him, it's Juwan Howard. Juwan Howard would be the one that's lucky he didn't get to him and do something that would have probably ended his career.
That was a wild take for me. And I saw that from journalists. And I was like, why is this the takeaway? It was weird.
Yeah.
So Ohio State takes down Purdue in overtime. Ohio State dropped 49 in the first half and choked it all away only to win in overtime. I was a little disappointed in my Boilermaker pick to win it all. I felt like this was their moment. But you know, hey, we talked about they are prone to Clemsoning in basketball. So.
Yeah, I mean, and Ohio State's good.
Yeah, it's apparently Illinois beat Rutgers by 22, and this was the game where I think a lot of us kind of looked down and said, "Oh, yep, we have a problem. Illinois appears to be functioning at all levels
right now." Yeah, and it's not just that they won by 22, but they did it scoring 90. Like, they did it by scoring 90 and holding Rutgers. Yeah, like when you score 90 and hold somebody else under 70, like that is a complete and total ass kicking in college basketball. To do it to a team that got into the tournament, which, by the way, shout out Rutgers. You got it.
That's right. Shout out Rutgers. And as a team that has lost by 30 to Rutgers. I watched that game, Illinois, and I was like, how did MSU beat Illinois? And you could argue that the MSU game was the game that turned around the season for Illinois.
Yeah, I mean, I and I were talking a little bit about that before, and like, I think it was probably a big light bulb moment for both teams. I mean, MSU really, you know, was in a complete and total, you know, area of desperation at that point in time, and they just punched Illinois in the mouth and they made them look soft. And that is the last time this season that you have seen Illinois look soft. They have been on an absolute tear ever since then, and they've been taking it to teams, been stepping on their throats. And I think, you know, it's one of those things where I think both teams, I mean, as much as Illinois would have loved to have won that game and outright won the conference, I'm sure, that loss might be the best thing that happened to them, and the win might be the best thing that happened to MSU. It proved to MSU, hey, we can go out there and beat anybody, because this is as good a team as there is, with the exception of maybe one or two. This is a top five legitimate team. We just took it to them, just out-muscled them. And then on the other side, I think Illinois, that was probably a huge wake-up call. And credit to Brad Underwood, who, not to toot my own horn, but again, fifth straight episode, going to do that, pat myself on the back, and say credit to him, because you could have let things unravel there. You really could have. AO got hurt, and you know, you got kind of punked a little bit, and instead you pulled your team together, won some huge games without your best player, and now he's back and you guys are absolutely rolling. So credit to Illinois. Like, this was the first of three really impressive games in a row from them on the weekend.
Let the record be shown that Austin has been on the Brad Underwood train, not just this year, but for years.
Oh, yeah.
Years. When he first came, you felt, I feel like you were like, Illinois is going to be a team. And you were right.
I just said commit to a style. That's the thing you have to do more than anything else in college basketball. Is you have to have a coach who's not going to come in and, you know, yeah, the best ones, you have to find some middle ground of working with what you got versus what you want to do. But you have to say, okay, we are going to play this style of basketball. We are going to run and we are going to press and we are going to defend. And that's how that's like what our thing is going to be. And it's not as extreme as it was at Stephen F. Austin when he was there, but he's done a really nice job, man. It's impressive to see what they've become.
Yeah. And, you know, to talk about adjusting, he said he brought that style to the Big Ten and he realized that it had a ceiling. And so he changed it up. You know, it wasn't as 94 feet of hell as it was when he brought it in. It just wasn't going to work at this level. It's too good of talent, you know, to press Cassius Winston's of the world, you know, so credit to him. Moving on, Iowa beats Wisconsin, and I got to put it on record. Wisconsin has gotten away with way too much, man. They have gotten away with too much. They have slid under the radar, and they have had the most disappointing Big Ten season of anyone. Anyone. They returned everybody, every single player that mattered from a Big Ten championship team, and they finished 500, and I don't understand it. Like, they have no excuse. They get away with too much. They aren't getting the proper slander.
I mean, listen, I'm never going to argue that we shouldn't be slandering Wisconsin basketball more. If you're looking for an argument here, you've come to the wrong place. but yeah, I mean, it's a pretty disappointing year. And I don't think, you know, Greg Gard is certainly not in any real trouble. But to your point, like, they started off hot. They brought back everybody from a conference. Like, they brought back everybody and now had Micah Potter for a full year. And yet we're sitting here saying, oh, none of their problems got fixed. And I think maybe the Greg Gard thing is getting, like, I'm not convinced he's really a good coach, because Wisconsin doesn't really do anything that they've never done before. And they don't do anything like exceptional on either side of the ball. He inherited a really nice roster and he's turned it in, you know, he's kept that rolling, but like, to not see growth from last year to this year. Yeah, COVID, I get it. But like, some teams grew. Illinois grew. Like, some of these other great, and Illinois brought back really good players, but fewer than, you know, I would say Iowa even grew a little bit. And Wisconsin just, you know, kind of didn't do that. So hugely disappointing year. I mean, to go in as a 9 seed I was kind of startled when I saw that. I was like, wow, I didn't realize how far they had fallen.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. It's not as if Michigan State wasn't disappointing. It's just that one team had to find new pieces and it didn't work out. One returned every piece. It seems like those are two very different things in my book. So I was just shocked. We all like just chose to forget, maybe. I don't know. There's too much else going on. But Ohio State took out Michigan in a really nice, fun game. You know, this was a game where Isaiah Livers didn't play. He has a stress fracture and has kind of out for an undetermined amount of time. And as a Michigan State fan, can tell you, stress fractures, they ain't fun. And when you are hoping that a player will come back, Josh Langford is the, you know, poster child of that. It's not to say that they had the same injury, but I think I would be surprised if Isaiah Livers came back, if only because he has a pro career to think of. What do you think?
Yeah, no, first of all, I totally agree with that. And then the other part of it is this isn't like a broken finger. Like, this, you know what I mean? This, you know, Brandon Dawson, if you remember, a handful of years ago, like, broke his hand or something a couple of weeks before the tournament. And he is, you know, more of like an energy guy. So he didn't need that as much, so he could play through it. This is like one of their two best on ball defenders, and a jump shooter and a driver of the ball. Like, this dude needs his foot. Like, this is his foot. This isn't his hand. This isn't like, you know, a wrist injury or even, you know, something else. Like, this is the, you know, a foot and a knee. It's the two things you really don't want. If you're a basketball player.
Yeah.
And it feels like it feels like this is one that, A, he's got to consider his pro options for sure. And then B, just like, you know, even if he wanted to come back, I don't know that you're just I don't think you can just duct tape a stress fracture on your foot and call it a day. So that's a huge loss for them. And it's going to, if he's out, it's tough to see them doing, you know, what their fans think they can do.
You know, one other note is, you know, obviously losing Livers is a huge deal. And I feel like a lot of people are pointing to that as, you know, the demise of Michigan, or at the very least a huge question mark. Ohio State played without Kyle Young again. And when you go up against Hunter Dickinson, who ate that game, by the way, which as he probably should have without a true big to defend him, Ohio State was able to overcome that. Now, to be fair, Ohio State had more time to learn how to play without a player. But we talked about it last episode, dude, like learning how to play without a rotational player today in mid-March, not fun. Not a fun experiment to be learning on the fly. I don't think it'll probably affect them too much in their first game, that, you know, but we'll get to them. The NCAA preview. Okay, quickly to wrap up, Illinois took out Iowa. Kofi outdueled Luka, and that's when we really knew there was a problem because then Illinois went on to take out Ohio State in a fantastic game, 91-88 in overtime, pushing the selection show to go even faster than in their 1 hour time slot to get all the picks in, which was thankful because if we had to sit there and drag out any further, I think I would have combusted.
Oh my God.
But that Illinois run here has kind of made them a trendy pick to win it all, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. And I'm not going to fight anybody that tells me they think they can do it, because this is a really, really good team. And we'll talk more about like the tournament here after the break, but things that great tournament teams have are an identity and a great point guard. And one other thing that other people don't have, like it can be kind of anything else, right? Mm-hmm. And Illinois has got all of that. They got the identity. They have tons of experience. Their best player is their guy with the ball in his hands most of the time, who is a huge matchup problem on both ends of the floor. And the thing they have that other people don't have is Kofi Coburn. I mean, you can only do so much with a 7'3" center. I mean, it's crazy. So it especially like him out-dueling Luka Garza I think that's a much bigger deal than people are probably making it, because you're not going to really find centers that can do what Garza can do offensively. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he was able to hang this entire time he's not going to face many bigger tests than that. So if he's passing that one, they've got as good a chance as anybody.
Yeah, you can't simulate Kofi Coburn. And, you know, that's why I love Illinois to make a run, because that guy walks off the bus and the other team is like, oh, no. And then Illinois that's is like, fair. Yeah, Illinois is like, yeah, actually, he's not our best player. And you're like, oh, okay. Very cool. Man. So with all that, NCAA tournament selections were made, Austin. Duke didn't make it.
Real shame.
Shame is right. And as we mentioned, that puts Michigan State with the second longest active NCAA tournament streak. It's Duke out this year. It's 23 years straight of dancing. I think we need to pause, soak that in, and everyone have a hard think about how unbelievable that is over this commercial break.
I think that's a great idea, Don. Great idea, John. Everybody, put your thinking caps on, get real sentimental, and we will see you all in a few seconds. All right, 3, 2, 1. Then we're back. Did everybody have a nice think? Wasn't that fun remembering all of those years that we've made the NCAA tournament? John, I can say, as nice as it is to know that we're in all of these things, I personally never want to have another day like yesterday ever again in my entire life. The process of waiting was one of the more excruciating half hours, 45 minutes of basketball related activities I've ever been through. Not only to wait, but to wait to be like the third from last pairing that gets announced was just like, I'm sitting there the entire time. I see Maryland, like I see Georgetown, I see Syracuse. I'm like, oh my God, like they might not get in. Like I was very, very on the edge of my seat. I know you, I don't even think you were in a seat. Is that right?
I mean, it may shock you to learn that I had found myself again on the floor, face down. tends to happen. I don't know when it's happening. I just find myself there when it's all over. But there they were. They popped up. I felt nothing as their name came on the screen. No joy, no anger. It was there. It happened. And I was like, okay.
Breathe. Yeah. Your very time is a flat circle. In that moment, I cackled personally. I laughed out loud. I think it was my only like defense mechanism because, you know, not only was it just like relief, but also it was very funny to see all of the things that we had talked about completely and totally be justified in the announcement of MSU being in the first four against UCLA. Like if you didn't think that brand was going to matter for the end of the, for these last few picks on the bubble. Again, I will take you no further than this game Michigan State is about to play in. There is no argument that I can hear that will tell me that UCLA deserves to be in this tournament, first and foremost. And second of all, that Michigan State should be below Syracuse. I remember there's another team that jumped the line in front of them. There's no real reason why Michigan State should be ranked where they are and not in this play-in game, or that they shouldn't be in this play, that they should be in this play-in game. So you're getting these two brands. Oh, it just so happens to be the nightcap of the Thursday night. Like, that's interesting. You know, it was done for TV. No good reasons were given for it. But I also, in saying that, want to say that no MSU fan has you cannot be mad about this. You're allowed to be mad, but you will be judged accordingly. Go ahead.
You can be mad at the team if you want to be mad at it. The program for taking so long to figure it out. But they did, and you can be proud of that too. But if you want to get mad about like, oh, MSU should actually be the 11 seed and not a play-in game. It's like, dude, beggars do not get to be choosers. This is the bed we made. Lost to Northwestern by double digits. Lost to Minnesota by double digits. Two guys that coach those teams can and should be canned soon. Like, let's not pretend those games didn't happen. They are part of the resume, too, as great as the big wins were. So this – did MSU deserve a better seed? I honestly don't know, dude. I do not know. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because this is what you're dealt. And I think if you want to look at the positive of it, MSU has more track record of winning must-win games in quick turnarounds with no rest than anyone else in the country. Yep. Anyone. They're the only team that's prepared that has done it when they had to, and they were must wins. Not just, there have been plenty of teams that had to play those types of schedules. I can't think of any that completed the must wins against, by the way, better teams than what MSU will be facing if they were to play three games in 6 days.
Yeah, I mean, MSU is backed into first of all, it'd be a privilege to play those three games, kind of like mm-hmm. you just said. Like if you find yourself doing that, you did several things right along the way, but you're right. No, I mean, again, that extra day off by losing to Maryland might actually end up helping. In fact, they've stayed in Indianapolis this entire time. And in like this weird twist for MSU, I've almost been like this is all their typical experience. I feel like in the NCAA tournament is they have to fly to like Seattle and then go to Tampa and then end up in Arizona. Like they feel like they go all over the globe most of the time. And this time, you know, they've just been able to hang out. One of the players, I think it was Aaron Henry, said he's been getting a great night's sleep in the king bed in the hotel that they've been staying in. So that's great. But yeah, you're right. No team, I think, in the country at this point is better built to withstand like the intangible things that are coming along with the hand that they've been dealt. Are there better teams? Yeah, quite a few, but including a few of the ones MSU might have to play. But I think from a mental standpoint, this team is in as good a spot as they've been all year, and we'll see. But the matchup with UCLA in particular, this is where beating those good teams really pays off, because I think MSU is going to look at UCLA and they're not going to underestimate them, but they've beaten better teams than these Bruins.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the good side of playing in an incredibly good conference.
Yeah.
Once you get out of that conference, and by the way, I think you're going to see that a lot this tournament. I have, it's easy to be up on the Big Ten, and I'll get into once we give a quick recap of all those games, but I think you're going to see the Big Ten do pretty well in these opening games because everyone's so relieved to stop playing each other. The UCLA game, and I do want to take a quick moment. Rarely does this podcast get huge dubs, but I think we've been talking about the fact that MSU would be in on brand if it came down to it. And actually, it may hurt them because of brand, you know, that they needed a marquee game. We heard the quotes after the bracket was released. The guy said, the head of the committee more or less said, we thought this would be a great way to kick off the NCAA tournament, to treat our fans to a marquee matchup like this. I mean,
exactly. I mean, again, that's what I was saying. Like, that's why this was always going. Like, if the Oregon States and the Georgetowns of the world hadn't stolen the bid, you know, and stolen some of those auto bids, MSU probably wouldn't have ended up in that spot. Right. But as soon as it was within the realm of non breaking the rules, like, possibility, it was always going to happen. This was destiny.
Yeah, and you know who you would have seen there instead, probably unfairly, if those didn't happen? Probably, like, Louisville, a brand.
Yeah, yeah.
So over a team like St. Louis, for the record. Like, so that's how I'll play it out. And it's always been about the money. Let's not pretend like it's just even more so this year than ever before. And we talked about that ad nauseum. So just rare dub, we want to get on the board here.
Yeah.
They do play UCLA. Some similarities. We've played this team last year. Feels like forever ago. It's actually in 2019. But beat them 75-62. And if you remember, the last time Michigan State squeaked into the tournament, they played UCLA. Do you remember that game? 2010,
sure,
I believe. Yeah, 2011. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Was that the Jordan Farmar-led Bruins? Or am I misremembering that?
I think you're misremembering, because this UCLA team was...
If I think of just a general UCLA team, I always land on Jordan Farmar, so it's very possible I'm just making stuff up.
Hey, it's okay. We don't have to remember that year. I just thought it was interesting, that same opponent in a year that Michigan State snuck in. I think also another similarity or thing that we should remember is, as we mentioned, when Michigan State played UCLA last year and won, there are a couple guys who are key contributors from that team who are even more key contributors this year in Tiger Campbell, their point guard, who is second in the Pac-12 in assists per game. But they have a brand new guy, a transfer for Kentucky, who might be their best player. I'll let you talk about Mr. Juzang.
Yes, Johnny Juzang. He is was at one point, first of all, tremendous name, was either a 4- or 5-star recruit in one of Kentucky's classes. And if you want to know what going to Kentucky can do for you, look no further than the fact that he transferred to UCLA and was the leading scorer the next year. So can't really blame kids for being the fifth kid in the UK class from time to time. But Juzang is now the leading scorer for these Blue Devils. Blue Devils, come on, dude. Bruins. Sorry. But yeah, he's like a 14-something point a game scorer. Checks in at 6'6", is a little bit dynamic, but doesn't do a ton more. His pedigree when he was coming out was the fact that he was a lights out 3-point shooter. So he's one of four guys on their team that shoot better than 35% from three. And they actually have 5 double digit scorers on the team too. So while he is sort of the, you know, quote unquote leader here, it's not like BYU, what we'll talk about in a minute, who has like one guy that is clearly the, you know, alpha number one on offense. It's just, he seems to be the, just the leading scorer most nights in and out, but he's a really good shooter. Tiger Campbell does a great job of finding him. I think he averages almost 6 assists a game. One thing to really know about UCLA is they play, their head coach is Mick Cronin, who you probably remember from Cincinnati, and they play very Cincinnati basketball. where it is deliberate, a lot of offensive sets, very good defensive team. They just kind of, they want to play a rock fight. And that's one thing that's going to be really interesting to see against MSU is, I mean, that's been MSU's style of basketball since they started to figure things out here. And it's almost going to be like, who can win uglier in a way. So this might not be a pretty game, but if MSU wants to change that, the way that goes, they got to try and get out and run, find a little bit of that, that 2019, 2020 Michigan State Spartans.
Yeah, that's interesting. You point, you talked about their tempo. It's so slow. It's actually like in the 300s in the country, meaning one of the slowest teams in the country. I think the best comparison I can give you in the Big Ten is Wisconsin without good defense. In the type of tempo, and they have a pretty decent offense. The defense, it would be the worst in the Big Ten. And I want you to think about some of the defensives you've seen in the Big Ten, Nebraska and Iowa. This would be the worst. So while Michigan State's offense often leads us desiring a bit more, this is a good team to be playing because they just are terrible at it. And I think a big part of it is they are down two of their front court members. They are in emergency playing some guys who just frankly are very bad at basketball. So
put it lightly.
Yeah, they're struggling to find their rotation, I think. And additionally, they are on the slide. They have lost four straight games, three of which were to NCAA tournament teams. Don't get me wrong, Colorado, at Oregon, and USC. I don't think the last two are actually that bad of losses. But then they lost to Oregon State in the Pac-12 tournament, which is a very bad loss. But I guess everyone was doing it, so they wanted to get involved because Oregon State's bad.
Wow, Chasers.
It's just I can't quite get my head around them. But again, they are very much on the slide, trying to figure things out. If you want to know anything about them, they don't do anything well. I'm sorry, I'm trying to be nice right about this. But I can't say a ton about Michigan State that they do really well either. You know, so yeah. This is very much going to be that MSU versus Wisconsin type of game, but I think it might be even uglier.
I think what MSU has to do though this is one of those games where you have to be the assertive team. And I think we've said it before that they get caught, they get caught playing other teams' style of ball. And that was really the biggest issue for them up until they started being like, oh, we can win rock fights. Let's win rock fights. So they need to try and do that. Like they've got to assert themselves here and do the things that UCLA can't really handle, and that is rebound the basketball. Like you have Marcus Bingham, who is going to be far and away the tallest player on the court. You have Malik Hall, who should be able to match up pretty well at the four. You've got Gabe Brown, who is as big and athletic as anybody on UCLA's team. You got to hit that glass and rebound the basketball because this is a team that doesn't do, like you said, John, a lot well. And that includes rebounding, especially offensively, because they don't have the size to really do it at this point. So if you can make them a one and out type of team, the way Wisconsin typically is, and then turn around and push it and try to get a little bit in transition or get an easy basket or two, take the ball to the middle of the court. The middle of the floor. They don't have the size to deter you at the rim. So either you're going to get good looks or you're going to get fouled by somebody smaller that shouldn't be guarding down the paint like that. So you have to be the assertive offensive team, and MSU falls into this trap from time to time, not from time to time, quite frequently, where they end up just taking the shots that are open. And the shots that are open are the ones that the defense wants you to take. So they end up playing into team's hands. And this happened against Maryland twice now. And as soon as they start breaking that tendency, they start to succeed. And I think this game, to me, will be won or lost by Michigan State. I mean, I truly believe that with this team, like, because UCLA is talent-wise, I would say at or below the level of MSU. Their roster construction is very weird. They are reeling. They are far from home. And MSU is kind of all of the opposite of that. and has won big games. I mean, that's the other thing about UCLA. It's not even like they have these big games that they've won at some point in the season. Their best wins are good losses. That's what they are at this point in time. So I can't believe I'm saying this, but MSU, I would personally be very disappointed if they lost this game to UCLA. At the end of the day, listen, they made the tournament. I'm not going to complain. You got in. You kept that streak alive. That's the most important thing. But this is a game against a team that does not measure up to several of the wins that MSU has so far this year.
Yeah, we talked about the reason why they're reeling is in their roster construction so messed up is 6'10 Jalen Hill out, 6'9 Chris Smith out. So now they're playing Cody Riley, who's 6'9. And beyond him, they're trying to spot minutes with a freshman who's bad and a sophomore in Kenneth Nwuba, who's terrible. And I don't mean that to be mean, but like if you see him come on the court, like someone's got to eat. And I think where Michigan State will wish they had more than anyone is a person to dump the ball down to and just take advantage. What they can't do and what I hope they don't do is play the Maryland game where Maryland said, oh, actually, we're going to go small. And we go, okay.
Right.
And it's like just because we're taking away our one advantage, even though our center position is not great, they don't have a center. They're playing a 6'6 guy at center in spot minutes as well to steal minutes. Like you got to take advantage of that, even if it comes with, you got to say, Julius Marble, my man, this is the time for that right hook to go in. You know, so
yep.
And this is not the time to be pulling jump shots. We got to be doing stuff at the rim, buddy. So the advantages are there if Michigan State wants to take it, I think is the main point.
Yeah, that's just it. There are opportunities here that are built into MSU's roster that they can. This team should not push them in many areas, either schematically or physically. I think it's a team that, again, does remind me of Maryland in some ways, which isn't the best omen, but. That I think MSU can win this game. It would be a pretty disappointing one. But let's mm-hmm. just say they win that game.
Dream big.
They would get to play the Fighting Jim Rafferdettes of Brigham Young University.
Wait, so timeout. One quick note. It should be noted that this first four game is a Thursday night. So let's get after it, boys and girls. But also, it's at Mackey Arena. And that's not fun for me. I don't love that.
No, I don't think anybody likes that. It would be nice for MSU to get off the schneid at that arena. But the fact of the matter is they are very much on the schneid still.
I'm telling you, right.
It's not great.
If they win this game, I'm absolutely counting that as a win at Mackey.
Oh, yeah.
Don't care. So if they do win, they would face the BYU Cougs in a – like I believe an 11 p.m. Eastern tip, which is just awesome for a Saturday night. I mean, that is drunk hours, folks. So grab a case of your faves and let's get after it. Hopefully we'll be in that situation. I will say about the Cougs, they will not be drinking while watching the game. We know that. That is
milk, maybe.
So we gotta do it for both the programs. This team has gotten better and better as the years progressed. And, you know, we talked about their UCLA's best wins were their losses. This is absolutely the case. They've lost to Gonzaga three times, but respectfully. And I think that's actually a big deal because Gonzaga might be one of the best teams we've seen in a long time.
Yeah.
You take those out. And I know it's not fair to say, oh, if you took away these games, but humor me. If you took those games out, they're 20-3. It's a nice team, right? So,
yeah.
You know, with losses, a couple dumb losses, don't get me wrong, but they lost big time to USC, who has a nice NBA prospect in Evan Mobley. They lost to Pepperdine, which everyone gets a mulligan. And then, as we mentioned, and then Boise State, who was a tournament bubble team, or they might even be in, I'm sorry. And then Gonzaga three times. So, this team, as you can imagine, probably old. Probably Josh Langford would fit right in on this roster as it relates to age. He's a lot of mid-20-year-old guys. The one thing BYU does really well is shoot the ball and defend the rim. It's a weird combo, but they do
well. They're a team of kind of extremes. Like, their three best players are Alex Barcelo, Brandon Everett, and Matt Harms, formerly of Purdue, who just, chef's kiss of a transfer for Matt Harms. Yeah. Barcelo is definitely their best player. I mean, he averages almost 16 points a game, and dude can shoot. Shoots nearly 48% from three. That's pretty good. He's listed at 6'2". Brandon Everett, I think, is listed at 5'11". So their backcourt is not going to do anything physically to push you. But that frontcourt with Harms is 7'3". They've got another 6'11", like 260 center. So they're kind of this team of like weird extremes. Like you said, they shoot the ball really well and they defend the rim really well. This is a tall task for Michigan State. This is one where you need to, again, I think the recipe for MSU is clear. You just go to the rack. Just get other teams in foul trouble. Get Matt Harms out of that game. Make a couple timely jumpers and check on the other end and let that take you as far as it can take you. And honestly, if you got the right mindset and you get the right matchups, which Michigan State might have here in these first two games, that can take you a little ways. And I will also say this. I do genuinely believe that there's something to be said for playing in the first four when you are not by nature of being in that game, you are not one of these, teams that's rolling in super hot or teams that are, you are not a Final Four radar team. Like, you are just sneaking into this tournament. There's something to be said for giving a team like that an extra game for them to get some positive momentum.
You're right, Austin. That can't be understated.
I don't think it should. There's a lot to be said for giving a team time to get their legs underneath them.
Dude, and that's where six seeds get in a little trouble, or in the past five seeds too. Two things to consider. This is going to be the last game played, I believe, on Saturday. So BYU will have watched, or, on their phones or not, every single game has been played. And they're sitting around and sitting around and sitting around, right? And then you're playing a team, whether it's MSU or UCLA, you're playing a team that has found its footing, and there's going to be no fatigue, not on the one game turnaround. You're fine. The fatigue comes the third game, if there is a third game, but there's no fatigue. So if there's ever going to be a sleepy team or a way to get a jump on someone, hey, you've played, you're ready to rock. You're feeling good about yourself. You're going to come out. If there's a way to jump a team that's better than you, this is a great opportunity to do it, because I do think BYU is a better team than Michigan State.
Yeah. I mean, they're rated, they're a number six seed for a reason. MSU is a number 11 for a reason. I completely agree with that. I just think we've seen higher highs from Michigan State and certainly many lower lows, which is why you end up where you are. But I think there's something to be said for the fact that this first four is not in Dayton. It's in West Lafayette, which is how far from Indianapolis? I mean, I don't even know if that game, I think, would also be played at Mackey. So, MSU in this weird way is almost like the home team in terms of being there, being comfortable. They've been on the road for all these weeks. I mean, again, I'm not saying that's going to win you a game. BYU is ranked where they are for a reason. They're a very good team. They've, like you said, hung with Gonzaga several times. And I personally think Gonzaga is by far the best team in the country. Like, I don't think it's particularly close with anybody else, not even Baylor, not even Illinois. And so there's something to be said for that. And they do have some size mismatches against MSU. But at the end of the day, to your point, if there's such a comparison as an 11 a.m. kickoff in Evanston, Illinois, this for the Big Ten football parallel, it is this 9 to 10 p.m. tip off in West Lafayette. And listen, if MSU's there, if they take care of UCLA and they get to this game, obviously BYU should be the favorite for a good reason. But this is not a game that wouldn't shock me to see MSU at the very least hang with BYU. And honestly, in the games where they've hung, they won. Games they lose, they get their asses handed to them. But most of these games that they hang, they find a way to win.
Yeah, if Michigan State were to play in this game, it would be at Hinkle Fieldhouse, which
that's Butler's.
Yeah, that would be Butler's. Yeah. So, like you said, I don't know, man. You just got to get here. All you can ask for is a ticket to the dance, right? And then
Right.
you kind of just say, you hope for the best. And I think you said it's nothing wrong with playing UCLA off the jump. And if you get BYU, if you're lucky enough to win that game and you play BYU, you got to feel okay about quick turnarounds, because I'll tell you, BYU doesn't know who they're going to play either. And they're scouting both, right? So
Yeah.
there's something to be said there. So, and then, MSU 5-2 in close games this year. I mean, that's not nothing. So,
Yeah.
and then if they were to somehow, pull off a couple wins here, they'd more than likely be playing Texas. Shaka Smart, is Texas back? I think
Oh yeah.
so, right?
Just like Shaka's hair, they are back.
That's right. We don't have to spend a ton of time because, candidly, this one is pretty far in the future. MSU beat this team last year too. I mean, granted, we don't have Cassius Winston and Xavier Tillman, but certainly a lot of familiar faces. So, not world beaters. Let's just put it that way. Texas is a
It's
very, very
it's
nice.
not a it's not a team that's a whole lot different than it was when MSU played them a year before. They play a similar style. They're more experienced. They have Greg Brown, who is a freak athlete. So that's definitely different. But again, if MSU makes it to that round, we are playing with house money, and you're
Absolutely.
going to go out there and you are going to feel no pressure to do a single thing. Playing Texas. Texas is gonna, this is this it's this weird karmic thing where MSU is the underdog, which is where they love being so much. And I don't think this is the most talented MSU underdog team, but we pin MSU as an underdog when they're a 5 seed. Now they're an 11 seed. There's almost zero chance they're going to play a team ranked below them. I mean, UCLA will be the lowest ranked team they play, so they're going to come in like with that bulldog mentality, and hopefully just win at least one game real ugly. If you play Texas, you're in a no, I mean, a no lose situation. And who, honestly, if you're BYU, okay, so this is something else to think about. Not as much for Texas, but for BYU. I think we said this on the pod before. There is still something to be said for the fact that Michigan State is the name on the front of that jersey. I don't
Right.
care if you're an 11 seed. You look at that team and you say, wow, this team beat Illinois, Ohio State, and Michigan when they were all rolling and all at full health. They beat all of them. And they needed to in order to get into this tournament. And they also beat Duke. Again, Duke didn't make the tournament still. This team has won. Has played good basketball for stretches this year. They've won big games, and they needed to win them. And that's still Michigan State. That's still Tom Izzo. That, if you're BYU, yeah, BYU, an established program, obviously. Yeah, that's still got to be intimidating, man. To see that as an 11 seed. And again, if you're Texas, you're like, oh, we're playing 11 seed. Oh shit, it's Michigan State. Like, of all of the teams that we could have to play, I don't know. I think there's something about that that maybe. It may be a psychological thing that kind of trips up one of the opponents. I have no idea. At the end of the day, MSU, this is not their most talented team, and that ultimately wins out most of the time. But I don't think it's impossible to see them making it to, winning a game or two here.
Hey, like I said, you have ups and downs, and if this is the down year for your program is making the NCAA tournament, that is something to be noted. It's pretty incredible. Very quickly, Austin, I think we mentioned the Big Ten, nine participants in this year's field. Got to feel good about a handful of them probably being Final Four national championship contenders. Illinois, one of them, they tip off Friday after, or one of the first tips on Friday against Drexel. Ohio State against Oral Roberts. Wisconsin, our disappointment, they're going to take on North Carolina. That doesn't seem like a fun matchup for Wisconsin. What do you think?
Now that's a tough one. Because UNC is a bunch of big dudes in Wisconsin. Wisconsin's big dudes don't really defend. So that's going to be a contrast of styles. But that's a tough matchup for Wisconsin.
Purdue, a 4 seed, taking on North Texas. I got to think Purdue feels pretty good about their draw, all things considered. This could be, it's been want to get ahead of myself, but this could be the year they make that NCAA Final Four run.
Really no, they're gonna. There's no chance.
My bad.
No, I won't. Say, no, I won't say it. I don't mean it. No, I don't like. This is one of those ones where I'll believe it when I see it. Like if they make it, great. Like good for them. But I don't know.
Yeah, they are.
This is also a game you say they could make it, and then I could also very easily see them losing in the first round.
I think one thing to consider as we go quickly through the rest of these is Big Ten has unparalleled bigs, centers, that I don't think besides North Carolina, as you mentioned, there are not a lot of programs that can match up. Like it becomes a very big problem right away between, you know, Kofi Coburn, Illinois, EJ Liddell, who's not a true big, but a very versatile one. You mentioned Wisconsin's, they play inside out, which is a little bit more of the norm, but Purdue with Trevion Williams and Zach Edey, you can't replicate that. And, right. You know, I didn't even mention Hunter Dickinson on Luka Garza. Like that's problematic for a ton of teams in the NCAA tournament. And you can't replicate that. And you might have a guy, but he's not productive. I'll tell you that much. So, right. I think just consider that when you're filling out your brackets. It's not an end-all, be-all, but, man, I think you're going to start to see these bigs really shine once they stop having to play each other. Rutgers plays Clemson. That should be a fun one. And then on Saturday, Michigan takes on the winner of Mount St. Mary's, Texas Southern. Iowa takes on Grand Canyon. And then Maryland takes on UConn in a late night on Saturday. How do you think – let's just gauge it. How many Sweet 16 teams do you think the Big Ten will produce?
Sweet 16. I mean, I think Illinois, Michigan, Iowa, Ohio State can all get there. So I would say, you know, again, I don't think it's likely for MSU, but I'd say 4 to 5. You know, Purdue, another one that I think I obviously get there. Yeah, it's going to be – I think Illinois is a Final Four team, not to spoil it, but I think Ohio State is at least a second weekend team. I think Purdue's got a chance to get there. I think Michigan is definitely going to get there, and Iowa's the only one. And like,
yeah,
only because if you can score, you can beat Iowa. Like they play again. I credit to them. They know their style. They play their style. We're going to score. We're not really going to defend it, and this is just how we're going to play. And that's great against most teams. But if you run into – if you're not hitting shots that day, if you're – somebody gets hurt, something like that, like you're toppling over pretty quick. So I don't think they're going to lose to Grand Canyon. But that second round game, it's not out of the realm of possibility. But I think MSU – excuse me. I think the Big Ten's going to have a really nice showing. I would expect at least – I think they should be disappointed with anything less than four teams.
I would agree. I think Iowa is going to not have too many problems just because Luka Garza is hard to simulate, as we mentioned. But I would watch out if they draw USC in the Sweet 16.
Right. Yep.
Evan Mobley is has a better ceiling than him and will excel in the NBA. Once Luka Garza gets locked up, the rest of that offense gets locked up. Like it gets very – you know, wrench in the gears. So that's something I would keep an eye on if USC
gets that far. Mobley's really good. And it's not even just that he's really good because they don't – I mean, he puts up great numbers. They don't necessarily feature him, especially offensively, but he is a super athlete, like a super, super athlete. He's going to be a top 2 or 3 pick next year in the NBA. And I think that athleticism and length is going to be what really gives guards a trouble. I mean, if he's having issues with the, you know, stature of he's a different kind of big than Coburn because Coburn is just so damn wide and large, but Coburn doesn't have the same type of length that Mobley does. Mobley's going to be able to cause some real problems. And honestly, Mobley offensively is going to do a lot more things to make Luka Garza keep moving his feet as opposed to what Coburn does, which is more just that classic like back down style. So yeah, that's a tough matchup. USC's got a pretty nice little team.
Well, and one more thing, Mobley has a brother on the team, Isaiah Mobley, who's 6'10" and is quite good. So sure. He's a sophomore. So it's not as if they have one guy, they have two. I know we're getting ahead of with hypothetical mashups, but you know, that's Iowa. That's how they fall apart, in my opinion. Maryland, as soon as they meet a true big, that's where they fall apart.
Right.
Michigan, I don't know when it happens, but they're going to have to overcome figuring out their rotation. Doesn't mean they can't win or advance. I just don't know what that looks like right now.
It's offensively is what's going to hurt Michigan, because listen, for even let's say Isaiah Livers is your third best offensive option, which is probably where he falls in, losing that the tournament.
Yeah.
That's a lot. And that's something that at some point you're going to need somebody else to fill that gap, and asking somebody to do that right now, which is either a hobbled Eli Brooks, Brandon Johns out of nowhere, or I'm not even sure who else you would give the opportunity to. That's a tall ask. And listen, if they make it, Juwan Howard should probably be coach of the year, because that's incredibly impressive. Absolutely. If they're able to do that without Isaiah Livers. I ultimately am not sure. Like you said, I don't know where it falls apart, but it would kind of surprise me if they were able to actually make that happen. Now, John, do you have I know we'll kind of revisit these every week, but like, do you have a favorite for who you think is going to win it all?
I think it's really impossible for me to say the Gonzaga can't, you know, and it's hard to gauge a ton because the non-con was a while back and teams have evolved since then, but they took everyone's best punch, you know. Mm-hmm. Until proven otherwise, I haven't really seen – you got to outscore them. Like, that's how you win. And they have five guys, actually, that put up double digits or something ridiculous. And I think the thing that I was most impressed by when they played BYU, and BYU is just having one of those games where just, like, everything goes in. Everything's going wrong for Gonzaga, and it just had every feeling of, like, this is the one. This is the clunker.
Right.
Mark Few didn't even call a timeout when they got down by double digits in the second half. Didn't even blink. Because he's just like, you know, if I call a timeout, then I'm calling attention to it. And then people start to seize up. They just shot their way through it. And they won by double digits or whatever. And it was like, damn. Even on a day where BYU was making everything. Like, they just didn't blink.
I think that speaks to two things. First, the fact that Mark Few is a really, 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 really good coach. and honestly, a guy that, again, if I'm Indiana, I probably make that call. You get laughed off the phone, but you make the call. The call is made. And the other part, I think, is it speaks to the maturity of that team, which is why I ultimately think they are going to win the whole thing. I'm going to fully agree with you. I mean, Kispert, Timmy, Suggs, it gets lost in the like ether here, but Andrew Nembhard was like the starter for Florida. It was like a very good point guard, and then transferred and is now like kind of their sixth-ish man, like plays 28 minutes a game. I think he actually starts, but is just like this glue piece for them. That's so incredible. But you know, they can score, they can check, they can switch. And the thing is, this would be a very, very good team. I still think they may have even gone undefeated without Jalen Suggs. And now Jalen Suggs is a top five NBA pick. And he takes them to a next level that I don't think you usually see from Gonzaga in terms of just like their ability to add this layer and do kind of whatever they want. I will say one thing. The only thing that would scare me a little bit, is that you really have Corey Kispert, who's a very good three-point shooter, shoots 45%. Ayayi shoots almost 40%. Below that, your other guys are kind of mid. Like Suggs is at 35, which is acceptable. Timmy's at 33, which is fine. Nembhard's at 34. You don't have super dynamic shooting, but you can do everything else. So that's the only thing I would keep an eye on is like it's not impossible if they have a cold shooting night, and ultimately that could be what gives them trouble. But I look at their bracket. I mean, I don't think Creighton, Virginia, dealing with COVID, Virginia, by the way, is going to give them any real trouble. And then on the other side, like you're talking either USC, who they should be able to handle, a non-vintage Kansas team who also had to pull out of their conference tournament, or Iowa. And to me, I don't see any of those teams standing in their way of at least making the Final Four. And then once you get to the Final Four, I mean, again, Michigan would be a tough matchup for them if they can get there, but Michigan's down Isaiah Livers. And then you look at the other side. I don't think they face a team that I look at and I'm like, okay, that team might be able to go toe-to-toe to them until legitimately the national championship. And then you're talking Illinois or Baylor in all likelihood. And I don't know. I think it's going to be very – it's hard for me. I won't pick anybody but Gonzaga. They've just been too damn good.
Yeah, and it would make Bobby Knight mad, so I'm all in on it because
strong Bobby,
he loves to talk about he's the last undefeated NCAA team, so I wouldn't hate that. But yeah, I mean, I don't know what I'm getting out of Baylor post COVID break. I mean, they don't look the same. I mean, they're not firing on all cylinders like they were. I kind of like Florida State. I think they're
so do I.
They shoot the hell out of the ball. They're long. They're deep enough to do it depth wise. They're fun. I like them a lot, even though they have some clunker losses. Their clunker losses happen when they shoot like 5 for 30 from the three. They don't stop shooting, which is
right.
So they can shoot themselves out of games, but they certainly have won more than they haven't. And I think, yeah, we mentioned Illinois already. It's just a fave for everybody. And then I think the other one for me is, you know, I keep talking about maybe this is the year for Purdue. I don't know. I mean, I don't like them. I just also look at that bracket and I'm just like, I don't know. Does Baylor have it? I don't know if they have it. I also like Ohio State too. They're tough as hell. Dwayne Washington Jr. and EJ Liddell, they're tough. Those are tough dudes. They willed themselves to the Big Ten championship game. They, despite their best efforts to lose some of those games, they still won. That's something to be said. So I don't know. This tournament's going to be a blast, man. I'm happy to be a part of it.
Yeah, so am I. I mean, it feels good to have it back. And I think now I'm realizing how much I missed it last year. Now that it's going to be back this year. And listen, anybody who's not excited to be in the final, the first four, we get to watch our team before anybody else. And listen, if it's over, it's over quickly. I think we can just enjoy the entire tournament
exactly
as normal.
No stress. Hey, one more fun one as a surprise. The winner, if they advance, the winner of the Tennessee-Oklahoma State game would probably play Illinois. Those games, man, Cade Cunningham is a dude, and Tennessee has underperformed this year, but they got guys. Those would be my watch outs too.
Cade Cunningham playing Illinois would be really fun. Yep. It would just be fun to see some like real high quality NBA. Like whenever those NBA guys end up playing against each other in these tournaments, it's good stuff. To see Dosunmu against Cunningham could be fun. That's a big opportunity for him. And I think he's the presumptive number one pick, but to see him shine here would do even more for him. So yeah, I'm pumped. I'm pumped. It's here. It's finally here. And, we get to enjoy it.
Hey, one game at a time. Hopefully,
that's right.
Hopefully, three big ones, and that would be something.
That would be something. We will be on here delirious if that happens. So everyone should be rooting for it.
All right,
guys. Well, John, we'll be talking. But guys, thanks as always for sticking with us. Happy March Madness. We'll catch you guys next week.
See you.